Hello and welcome to the Indiana Lawyer Podcast, your source for news in Hoosier law, brought to you by Taft. I'm Alexa Schrake, Indiana Lawyer Reporter, and your host for this week. As always, I'm here in our Monument Circle studio with Managing Editor Daniel Carson and Reporter Mara Johnson to give you the rundown on the latest legal news. Plus, I chat with IndyBar Hispanic Lawyers Division Chair Briseida Ortega about an upcoming CLE. So, let's get started. Today is Wednesday, May 1st, 2024, and these are your headlines. To start, Mara, you have news on another media request to allow cameras in the courtroom for the Delphi double murder case.
The special judge in the Delphi double murder case has denied several more requests to allow cameras in the courtroom for Richard Allen's trial in May. Allen is accused of murdering two teenage girls near Delphi in February 2017. His trial will begin on May 13th. On April 24th, Special Judge Francis Gull denied camera requests from WTHR-TV in Indianapolis, ABC 57 News in South Bend, and the News Media Coalition, which includes the Associated Press, Getty Images, Thomson Reuters, and other publications. Gull also rejected a request earlier in April from Wish TV Channel 8 in Indianapolis, increasing doubts that any video cameras will be allowed at one of the most high-profile criminal trials in Indiana in decades. Gull has not yet made an official ruling denying all cameras in the courtroom, according to court documents. Cameras have not been allowed in a courtroom for hearings in this case since October 19, 2023. In the ruling for a hearing on October 31st, Judge Gull denied camera access, citing, quote, the unauthorized filming and broadcasting of pre-hearing activities in the courtroom on October 19, 2023.
Thanks, Mara. Carmel Clay Schools did not violate state law by refusing to sell an elementary school building to a charter school, the Indiana Court of Appeals ruled. In 2018, Carmel Clay approved the construction of a new Orchard Park Elementary School building and that the students wouldn't be moved into the new location until 2021. Carmel Clay used the old location for storage space for the school district. Indiana Classical filed a complaint with the Indiana Attorney General's office claiming Carmel Clay failed to comply with the requirements of the dollar law. Initially, the law required public schools to sell or lease an unused building to a charter school for $1. Hamilton Superior Court ruled in Carmel Clay's favor, granting summary judgment, and the appellate court upheld that ruling. Daniel, what do you have on a recent federal ruling against an Indianapolis-area TV station?
The owner of Wish TV failed to show evidence that a pair of television distributors racially discriminated against him in declining to pay retransmission fees to carry Wish and sister station WNDY-TV. The Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals ruled in affirming a lower court's decision. The court ruled that when Dish and DirecTV Network declined to pay broadcast fees to Circle City Broadcasting for rights to carry the company's two Indianapolis-based television stations, that decision did not reflect discrimination against Circle City's majority owner, Dewan McCoy, a black man, or the company itself. For their part, Dish and DirecTV presented clear evidence of a race-neutral reason for their contractual negotiating decisions, Circle City's lack of bargaining power, the Seventh Circuit Court ruled. The ruling upholds an earlier decision by U.S. District Court in Indianapolis, which granted summary judgment in favor of Dish and DirecTV and concluded that Circle City failed to identify evidence permitting a jury to find that the decisions not to pay the broadcast fees reflected anything other than lawful business choices responsive to dynamics of the television broadcast market. Now over to Mara for news on a lawsuit filed against the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
A concertgoer who attended last May's Snake Pit event during the Indianapolis 500 weekend is suing Indianapolis Motor Speedway, LLC, after allegedly being hit in the head by a glass bottle during the festivities. The lawsuit was filed on April 15th on behalf of Taylor A. Brown in Marion Superior Court. According to the complaint, Brown was in the Snake Pit on May 28th when he was hit in the head by the bottle, which was thrown by an unknown person. Brown suffered pain, scarring, and disfigurement, the lawsuit states. In its rules and regulations, the Speedway prohibits patrons from bringing glass containers onto Speedway grounds. The Speedway did not immediately respond to Indiana Lawyer's request for comment. Brown claims it was the Speedway's job to keep guests safe. He is seeking compensation to cover medical expenses, lost wages, and other special expenses.
Thanks, Mara. She will keep you all updated on that lawsuit. Indiana Attorney General Todd Rokita, who is seeking re-election in November, holds a commanding fundraising advantage in the race for attorney general with more than $1 million in his coffers. Financially, Rokita is well positioned to combat a challenge from Democrats who have about 1/10 or less than Rokita's campaign cash on hand, according to reports filed with the Indiana Secretary of State. Democratic candidate Destiny Wells ended the first quarter at $106,557.84, according to her campaign finance report. Wells will face Democrat Beth White at the party's state convention, where delegates will choose the attorney general nominee. White trails in the fundraising race, reporting $32,672.25 at the end of the first quarter. But she started her campaign about 2 months after Wells. Wells and White will square off at the state Democratic convention on July 13th. Rokita currently faces no opponent for the GOP nomination at the party's convention on June 15th. The Democrat and Republican nominees for attorney general will face each other in the November election. Now, traveling to Delaware County, what news do you have for us there, Daniel?
A Muncie woman faces 32 years in prison after being sentenced in Delaware Circuit Court for dealing in a controlled substance resulting in death. Indiana lawyer reported in March that Kimberly Twigg, 30, had pleaded guilty to the charge. Twigg had admitted that after she watched the victim die of the drugs she sold him, she continued to sell drugs for 9 months until her arrest. In January 2022, police were called to a home on Yale Avenue for a report of an overdose. There, they found Robert Zachariah Combs York dead. His family told investigators Twigg was at the scene when York died. They said Twigg was a drug user and may have been involved in his death. A witness informed police that Twigg told him what happened, saying she and York were together on the night of his death. While at her residence, York reportedly asked Twigg if he could buy heroin from her, which he ingested nasally. At some point, Twigg went to take a shower and heard York gasping. When she called and he did not answer, she found him overdosing, authorities said. Twigg was taken into custody, where she eventually admitted to investigators that York asked for heroin and she sold it to him for $2. She said the heroin was bought from someone in Ohio.
The U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Indiana is welcoming its new magistrate judge, Scott Frankel. Frankel was selected out of a pool of 30 applicants to replace current magistrate judge Michael Gotch on the bench. Gotch is set to retire in August of this year after serving the position since 2016. Frankel graduated from Oberlin College in 1981 and the Ohio State University Moritz College of Law in 1985. His career includes litigation experience in both criminal and civil matters, serving as a Cook County public defender, a partner at Frankel & Cohen, and law clerking in the U.S. District Court for Ohio Southern, among other positions. Frankel's appointment is effective upon completion of required IRS and FBI background investigations.
And finally, to wrap up this week's headlines, Daniel, tell us what you're working on for our next print issue.
I'll be taking a look at the Biden administration's PFAS roadmap to reduce the amount of toxic substances in a new EPA final rule that designates two widely used PFAS chemicals as hazardous substances under the Comprehensive Environmental Response, Compensation, and Liability Act, also known as Superfund, and is designed to ensure that polluters pay to clean up their contamination and reduce contamination in drinking water. You can read all about it in Indiana Lawyers' May 8th issue.
Okay, that'll do for this week's headlines. As always, if you want more legal news, check us out at theindianalawyer.com. Stick around after our sponsor break to hear my interview with Briseida Ortega.
Taft, today's modern law firm. At Taft, we cultivate a highly respectful, transparent workplace that fosters creativity, teamwork, inclusion, and diversity. We couple our culture with a client-first approach, rewarding lawyers who understand their clients' goals and work to deliver success. Taft, the modern law firm. To learn more, visit taftlaw.com.
I have with me today Indy Bar Hispanic Lawyers Division Chair Briseida Ortega. Briseida is an attorney with Hensley Legal Group. The Hispanic Lawyers Division is sponsoring a CLE on new developments in immigration law on May 2nd. There are always changes in immigration law, and especially with administration changes. So to start with, you know, some things that the Hispanic Lawyers Division may have on its radar, do you think there are enough Spanish-speaking attorneys for the Spanish-speaking population here?
No, I definitely don't. There really aren't that many Spanish-speaking attorneys, not just like in the Indianapolis area, but I think statewide, nationwide. So there is always going to be a need for more bilingual attorneys.
What does your firm kind of do with that, like in those issues?
Well, specifically talking about Hensley Legal Group, honestly, I'm not saying this because I work there, but the office is truly amazing. They are always looking for ways to be able to help our clients that are not English speakers. So we do have a pretty big number of employees that are bilingual, including myself. There's just a lot of us that are Spanish speaking. So no matter what area your case is in or who's handling your case, you will have someone that speaks Spanish as a client so that you're comfortable. You can speak to someone in your own language and know what's going on. So obviously, you know, we are a little bit bigger of an office, but this is something that I hope that most, if not all, attorneys, firms or smaller offices can have, or at least have the option of having or the opportunity to have, because it's just so helpful, not just for us, but also for the client.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just kind of talking about, you know, the CLE that you have coming up. You know, what are some of, you know, the new developments in immigration law and why this CLE?
Oh, my goodness. I don't even know where to start with all the developments in immigration law because there's so many. And just to clarify, I am not an immigration attorney. While I do have some experience in that area, that's not my focus or my area of practice right now. So I wouldn't really be able to dive into all the changes because I'm not familiar with everything that is going on right now. But our CLE on May 2nd is going to focus on, well, one, the immigration court that is or should be coming to Indianapolis. There isn't a lot of information out there, so there's no like exact date. We don't really know much about it, except that we're supposed to be getting an immigration court sometime in the near future. So this is something that has been said for a few years now, and it's been getting pushed out. So I really don't know when it's supposed to be here, but the CLE is in a way meant to like prepare the attorneys in the area that already practice immigration, but also those that don't, so that they can get some more information from seasoned attorneys, the, you know, other attorneys that are experienced in immigration. And let's say it's like younger attorneys or students that are interested in going into the immigration area, just what they can expect, like a generalized breakdown of things that you can do with the immigration court or ways that you can help out our clients. But more importantly, we hope that it will provide a source or like several resources for those that are not in the area and are needing help to get into this area.
Yeah. And this is also sponsored with the Young Lawyers Division, right?
Yes. So this is a joint CLE with the Hispanic Lawyers Division and the Young Lawyers Division of Indy Bar.
And do you think this will kind of help, you know, the young lawyers like that, you know, maybe didn't really consider this as a practice area just because, you know, we have like the immigration court in Chicago, might be like, I don't really want to do all that driving or whatever it may be, to be kind of, you know, maybe, oh, like this might be something I want to do.
Yes, I definitely hope, and, you know, everybody working on the CLE hopes that this will encourage law students or attorneys that are still looking for a specific focus or haven't really found what they, like a specific area they really want to do, or somebody that just wants to add a different practice area. We hope that this will encourage them to learn more and to reach out to, like I said, those experienced attorneys that can kind of help guide them.
I know you said you don't currently practice immigration law. Did you used to?
I did.
What was that like for you?
The best way to put it, I would say, is that it was a challenge every day, and it was something new every day. It's one of those practice areas where it could seem like a very simple thing, but this is somebody's life in this country. So it's one of those extremely fast-paced areas of law where you're always on, because emergencies happen in the middle of the night. And it's such a fast area where if something isn't done same day, somebody could be gone in a few hours. Obviously, it's also a very slow area because of all the backlog with all the different processes that you have. So it's a very difficult area because it's ever changing, but it's also a very rewarding area to practice in. You're just helping people every single day.
Absolutely. Yeah. What are some of the key things that you hope people can take away from this event? I feel like you probably already touched on it, honestly.
I did, yes. So key thing, like first, if you have any kind of interest, no matter how small, you should definitely attend. Even if you don't know anything about immigration law, this is a perfect CLE to get some like basic knowledge and just to figure out where you're going to go from here. So I truly hope that people come just to get that basic understanding. I also hope that, something else that I hope people take away from this is just the changes that we could expect with an immigration court in the city.
So border control is a hot topic in the primary election and has been brought up by several candidates, including some that are running for Indiana governor. You know, what are some of the typical misunderstandings that you've seen people have when it comes to immigration law?
When it comes to immigration law, specifically like the actual law, I think a big misunderstanding is that people think that this is something that can be easily changed. It just takes so much, I guess, background work. It's not something where they could just, like a change can just be made and then everything is fixed. There are so many moving pieces. I wish it was something that could just be easily changed or easily fixed, because there are so many issues, so many problems, so many backlogs, so many people just waiting for answers. But that's probably the biggest misunderstanding, that it's just not going to happen in a day, but there should definitely be more done.
What do you kind of hope like an average person just knew about, you know, immigration?
Probably just more in general that this is someone's life and someone's future, and we don't know what a person went through to get here or to be in the situation or position that they're in. So for more understanding in general of everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Alrighty. So that'll do for this week's interview. Briseida, thank you again so much for joining me today. And to our listeners, head over to theindianalawyer.com to hear our past interviews. You can also find us on your favorite podcast apps. We'll talk to you soon.